If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Now, you know Dr. Rachel Woodlock from our Friday panel. She's an academic and writer, currently an assistant lecturer in the Department of Religious Studies at Cork University. She recently wrote an article for the Irish Examiner on the Irish experience of Ramadan. We decided we'd have a chat with her this morning, find out a little more about this. Good morning to you, Rachel.
Good morning, friend. It's funny, I feel like it's a Friday.
I don't know what day of the week it is, Rachel. I'm permanently like that. Congratulations on the article, because it was informative, but it also gave me a smile here and there as well. Particularly the Irish reaction when they hear about Ramadan is interesting, isn't it?
It is. They're very polite. They just sort of look at me and say, fair play to you, but I wouldn't do that in a million years.
Because we feel badly done to enough where Lent is concerned, but when we hear about the kind of restrictions around Ramadan, it pales into insignificance, really.
You'd think it'd be hard. You'd think that Muslims would be miserable in Ramadan, but they're the happiest time of the year. It's bizarre.
And tell us about that sense of celebration when really you're starving yourself for large portions of the day.
I know. It's a bit of a shock to the system. But I think, and what I think COVID has really brought to light is actually how much it is a social endeavour, because, you know, for a whole day, you know, you give up your coffee. You have to give up the coffee at least a couple of weeks before Ramadan starts, because otherwise the caffeine withdrawal in those first few days is wicked. But, no drink, no food, nothing in the bedroom department, and and you're looking forward to it at the end of the day. And then usually what happens is, you know, families gather together to break their fast together. You know, usually the mums cook something really delicious, you know, the mouth-watering foods that, you know, that you love, that you're looking forward to. So it's a really big social time for getting together with family and friends. And you know, we go to the mosque usually and say evening prayers. So we often meet up more frequently with members of the community. So, yeah, it's a really happy time, strangely enough.
And what is behind that notion of fasting and, indeed, depriving yourself? What do you gain from that?
Well, it's funny, because you sort of think, well, why on earth would you do it? But having done it for many years, first of all, you suddenly become very aware of actually how dependent on everything you are, your body, even just to have food and water, and how dependent we are on people who stock shelves, you know, the people that stock the Tesco shelves, the farmers that, you know, that milk the cows and everything. You become immediately aware of how interconnected we all are. But also, too, there's a sense that this is a special time where if you can learn to resist the donut cravings that you get at 10 a.m. in the morning, if you can learn to have a bit of self-discipline and a bit of willpower, that actually is going to make you a stronger person to withstand, you know, the normal tests and trials of life. So, you know, there's a discipline to it. I mean, ultimately we do it because, well, God says do it, so we do it. But there's a sense that this is somehow a training regime for your spirituality, but also, you know, to also foster an empathy, to be aware that actually there are people out there who don't have 3 square meals a day, and that because a lot of Ramadan is also, we're very highly encouraged to give charity, and particularly during the Ramadan period, it's considered to be even more blessed and meritorious. So Muslims will donate and give charity, particularly to, well, this year I can't help but think of all the people in India who are going through the most horrific COVID crisis that they're going through at the moment. So,
Fasting, at least my understanding, Rachel, is fasting begins at sunrise. Is that it?
Oh, it's before sunrise.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's dawn, which at the moment is around about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
But it was worse in June and July. That was like, there's no point going to bed. You might as well just stay up and have your breakfast and then go to bed after breakfast.
Wow. So it's not a particular hour. You have to literally see where dawn is.
Yeah, you do. You have to, it follows the rising of the whole circular movement of the earth and the sun. So it gets progressively earlier when we're this side of the winter equinox, or whatever it is, the solstice. So it's getting earlier and earlier and earlier, and the fast breaks later and later and later. So it runs for 30 days. So by the end of it, you know, you're well trained.
I can well imagine. But it's particularly difficult because you can't have a drink of water even.
No, I know. And I can't imagine what they used to do in the Middle East before air conditioning. I really can't. Because I've been in Abu Dhabi during Ramadan one year, And you'd walk outside and it was like a brick wall of heat just hit you. And so I've got to say props to them, for the Bedouin in the tents in the middle of the desert. I just don't know how they did it. But you know what, though? You do actually, the first few days, it's a bit of a shock to the system. Mm. But then you actually get used to it. You sort of, your body does adapt. And you do get used to the rhythm of it. And in the evening, you think, during the day, you think, right, I'm going to have this. I'm going to have a litre of orange juice, and I'm going to have a big plate of lasagna or whatever is your favourite food. And then you break your fast, and about 20 seconds into it, you're like, I'm so full. I couldn't eat another thing.
Are there some exceptions to the restrictions of Ramadan?
Oh, yeah. So if you've got any kind of illness, so I'm not fasting at the moment because I've got a couple of underlying illnesses.
Right.
But so if you're say, for example, diabetes is probably the most well-known, or if you're pregnant and that you're worried that it might harm the baby, you don't have to fast. Or if you're breastfeeding, you don't have to fast. So if you've got some kind of condition where any condition really that fasting will make it worse or exacerbate or endanger your health, you're actually not allowed to fast. You're not supposed to fast.
Right.
Do
you find people are very inquisitive about it? Because there's an element of mystery to it in some way.
Yeah, I think it's more just that incredulity that you can't imagine being able to go without water and food for so long. But I think people sort of, they do understand. I think in Ireland there is that more of a connection even, I'd say, than when I was living in Australia, because there is that experience of Lent. So people understand the concept of fasting and the concept of giving something up. That's not an uncommon or unthought of experience. So probably, actually, there's probably more acceptance even, I'd say, in Ireland.
And of course, right across religions, I mean, as I say, you know, the Catholic notion of Lent, the Jewish one, is that Yom Kippur, is it?
Yeah, Yom Kippur. And they actually have other fasting days too, but Yom Kippur is the most important. And they do 25 hours with, like the full 25 hours, like at least we can break our fast at sunset, but full 25 hours of nothing, so that props to them.
And
the Hindus have fasting, and the Baha'is have fasting, and Buddhists fast, so it's very common to religious traditions. So I think the fact that it is so common to so many spiritual traditions, there must be something of value to it. I think there must be something that enriches human experience in some fashion.
Well, I suppose there's an element of a contemplation to it as well.
Mm, yeah, yeah. You do become more aware of your fragility. You become more aware of others. You become, if you're a religious Muslim, because a lot of Muslims fast, even if they're not particularly religious, it seems that they'll still fast Ramadan. They may not pray, they may not go to the mosque, they may not, they might even drink alcohol or whatever, but they'll still fast for Ramadan.
Mm.
And there is that sense that this is a time to connect to God, to be more in tune with His will and what you think He wants for your life. And so it's a special time, yeah.
In the article, you made me laugh when you said that, when you are fasting and you might go into the staff room and somebody's heating up a curry or
oh,
something
yes.
like that.
Oh, that's cruel.
Your tummy is rumbling and all of that, yeah.
It is. It's cruel. And in a lot of Muslim countries, everyone's fasting, so they don't have to worry about it. It's harder for us that are in the Western world and the curry's being cooked in the microwave, or someone's brought out the nice bickies and you think, oh, I'm doing this for God. I'm doing this for God.
Could I drag you just briefly into a conversation we were having with Phil Prendergast, and you often share the panel with Phil, of course, as well. But we were speaking about the fact that sex education currently being overhauled following a major review. And I'm just wondering where you stand on that, Rachel, and how we approach sex education, taking the different ethoses, if that's a word, into account. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm one of those people who thinks it's really important we have good sex education in schools, because the research shows that where there isn't good sex education, you have much higher rates of teenage pregnancies, of sexually transmitted diseases, of all sorts of things that, we really want our young kids to avoid. So good scientifically based sex education is really important. Now, we can leave it up to the different churches and mosques and synagogues or whatever to impart, the moral ethical teachings around, for example, some, like in Islam, Islam teaches that sex should be kept within the marriage bond.
Mm.
So we're very strong on abstinence before marriage. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm a really practical parent, and I think you should be really realistic and say, look, this is what our religion teaches, and, we can have our priests and imams advocate for this, but the reality is that there are kids who are going to have sex, and we need to make sure that they are educated and that they're protected. It's too late once the horse has bolted. So we,
of course, yes.
Yeah, I'm really an advocate.
And where transgender is concerned, and gay kids and all of that, how do you get around incorporating that into the education as well?
Yeah. Well, again, I think you have to look at what the science shows. And the difficulty, I think, I suppose, from a religious perspective, and this is why I also think, too, that I actually do think that there should be a bit of separation of church and state in terms of the education. Mm. And I think, absolutely, religions have the right to impart their own moral code and for parents to impart that moral code to their kids. Absolutely, 100%, that shouldn't be infringed upon. But I also believe we live in a multicultural, multi-religious society, even though it is predominantly Catholic. The reality is that there are people from different persuasions, and so consequently our schools should be an arena in which not one particular viewpoint is advocated. I really think there should be a separation of
A lovely, gentle way to put it. Basically what you're saying, I suppose, is give all of the information, put it out there, and then if there's certain ethos from religion or whatever that's to be imposed on it, that's up to the individual.
Yeah, it is. And I think that also too, from a religious perspective, I mean, this is what I've taught my daughter, that that kids who have, and she's got one of her besties in Australia is actually transgender, and we love them no matter what. You know, that's we love Hatsy that with all of our being and our might. And so consequently, I want that for all kids who are going through, you know, the difficulties. Puberty's hard if you're transgender. Mm. That's the worst, that's the hardest time, I would say. And same with gay kids, you know, like I want them to be loved and accepted. And, you know, where the religious teachings, and I'll be honest with you, Islam teaches that that even though homosexual people, you know, we don't have any problem with the science of it, but from an Islamic perspective, sex still has to remain within a marriage between a man and a wife.
Yeah, which is the same as the Catholic tradition.
It is. And I would be lying if I said that Islam taught differently. Mm. There are Muslims who are advocating that there should be a reinterpretation of the scripture, but 99% of Muslims, if you were to poll them, would say that. But at the same time, I also believe that Islam teaches that, you know, to each his own, and that religion shouldn't be imposed upon anybody else. And that means that we have a society in which there should be religious freedom, and that means if, you know, for gay kids and who don't follow Islam or they don't follow the Catholic teachings, you know, that they absolutely have the right to be respected, to be honoured and to be acknowledged as they are with their beliefs. So, you know, absolutely, I think, in separation of church and state.
Well, Rachel, we wish you well. How long more with Ramadan?
It's only got about 9 or 8 days left. So
You said that with such passion.
I know, it goes really quick. It's crazy how quick it goes. And then we have our Eid, we have our big festival, but it's going to be a bit muted this year because of coronavirus.
Of course.
Anyway, hopefully next year will be better.
Well, listen, we wish you well. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks,
good morning to you. Bye-bye now. That's Dr. Rachel Woodlock speaking to us this morning. News and information's on the way.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.